Okay, we're starting here from the top of Yud Amud Aleph, right after the Mishnah. Yesterday we left off the Mishnah, which said, Ein Ben Shilo LeYerushalayim, which one of the distinctions that was made here is that when it comes to the Kedusha of Shiloh, it's only a temporary Kedusha, whereas the Kedusha of Yerushalayim is a permanent Kedusha. Therefore, after the destruction of Shiloh, Bamot, these types of mizbechot and independent type of worship of Hashem is permitted. Whereas after the Churban HaBayit, that is not the case. That's what our Mishnah states. Now the Gemara is going to deal with that on a more global level, which is Amar Rabbi Yitzchak. Shemati shemakrivim bebet chonyo bizman hazeh. I understand that they are makriv korbanot in Beit Chonyo. Beit Chonyo was found in Mitzrayim today. Now, Beit Chonyo is described in the Gemara in the end of Menachot. It has to do with the children of Shimon HaTzadik. Over there, there are two versions of the story as to the altercation between the children of Shimon HaTzadik as to who is going to take over for their father's position. In the end, one of them runs away to Mitzrayim. And in running away to Mitzrayim, establishes Beit Chonyo, which became a large center of worship, even for Jews, in Mitzrayim. The Beit Chonyo, there in the Gemara Menachot, there's a machloket as to whether Beit Chonyo was a temple dedicated to Hashem, or was it a temple that was dedicated to Avodah Zarah. So now Rabbi Yitzchak makes a comment about Shemakrivim Beit Chonyo Bezman Hazeh. Kasavar, the Gemara says from that, you must conclude that Beit Chonyo lav Beit Avodah Zarah. The first thing is, the fact that he's talking about Beit Chonyo in the context of the Kedusha or Bamot means that he thinks that Beit Chonyo is a temple that's dedicated to Hashem. That's number one. Number two is, V'kasavar Kedusha Rishona Kitcha L'Shaita V'lo Kitcha L'Tadavo. That means, upon the building of the first Beit HaMikdash, the Kedusha that was established at that point in time was only temporary and not permanent. Because if it was permanent, then that Kedusha would preclude you from having any center of worship outside of Yerushalayim. The fact that he is saying that Beit Chonyo, they have worship in this temple, indicates that he believes that Bamot were Mutarot, even after the building of Yerushalayim, even after the establishment of Yerushalayim as the center of worship for Kalal Yisrael. So the Gemara concludes two things from that statement of Rabbi Yitzchak. Number one is that Beit Chonyo is a temple to Hashem, and number two is Kedusha Rishona. The Kedusha from the Beit HaMikdash Rishon was only temporary and not permanent. Dichtiv. And where does he learn that from? Kilovate mad ata ela minucha v'ela nachala. You have yet to reach the point of minucha nachala, as pasuk in Dvarim, that you will reach the point of minucha nachala. We learned this again with regards to the Mishnah that we saw yesterday, which is minucha zu shilo. Minucha refers to Mishkan shilo. Nachala zu Yerushalayim. Nachala refers to Yerushalayim. Now, the way our Mishnah darshans it, or the way that it's found in the Mishnah, is that there is a separation between Shiloh and Nachalah and Yerushalayim. Why does the Pasuk separate them? To tell you that between Shiloh and Yerushalayim, there is Heter Abamot, but after Yerushalayim, there's no Heter Abamot. On the other hand, the way Rabbi Yitzchak is going to learn the Pasuk is that there's actually an equivalence drawn between Shiloh and Yerushalayim. Mekish Nachalah L'Menucha. Ba Menucha Yesh Acharei Heter, just like by Shiloh, everybody agrees, after the destruction of Shiloh, Bamot, independent worship outside of the central location, is permitted. Af Nachalah Yesh Acharei Heter. So too by Nachalah Yerushalayim, even after the construction of Yerushalayim, upon the destruction of Yerushalayim, we go back to Heter HaBamot. So this is the statement that we have in the name of Rabbi Yitzchak. So Amrulei, the Beit Midrash, they said to him, Amarta, did you say this? So Amrulei, no, nah, I didn't say that. So Amarova, Rava pipes up and says, Elohim Amra. He takes Elohim's like a Shvua. He definitely said it. And I personally learnt it from him. So he is defying this denial by Rabbi Yitzchak and said Rabbi Yitzchak really did say this. So the Gemara says, obviously Rabbi Yitzchak changed his mind. My time akahadarbe. So why did Rabbi Yitzchak retract his position and therefore deny that he ever said it? Mishum de kasho. He had a problem to Rabbi Mari. He had a problem from the statement of Rabbi Mari, the motive of Rabbi Mari. Kedusha shilo yeshachreha heter. So here's the first statement, which is the way that we learn Kilovatem ad ata ela minucha v'la nachala in the Mishnah, vis-a-vis what we saw now in the Pshita of Rabbi Yitzchak, which is that ela minucha v'nachala says that minucha means Shiloh has a heter achareha, nachala Yerushalayim has no heter achareha, there is no bamot afterwards. In addition to that, Vodznan, we have a Mishnah that says, Mishibau Yushalayim, Nesru Abamot. Once they reach Yushalayim, the Bamot are Asurot, Velo Yilhem, Od Heter. And there was never any Heter afterwards. V'yaitala Nachala. And that is what's classified as a Nachala. So here you have a statement from Rav Mari, as well as an explicit Mishnah that says that Kedusha Rishona was permanent. And therefore, even after the Chorban Yerushalayim, there is no Heter Habamot. So that caused Rabbi Yitzchak to retract his position or rescind his position because of these statements. Tosfot asks a very strong question over here. He says, wait a minute, didn't Rabbi Yitzchak know the Mishnah beforehand? We're not talking about a Braita. Here we're talking about a Mishnah. How did he not know the Mishnah that Kedusha Rishona is permanent? That's number one. Number two is the Gemara is about to show us that it's actually a Machloket Tanaim. And there are two positions within the Tanaim. Why can't Rabbi Yitzchak in the end just subscribe to the position in the Tanaim that says that Kedusha Rishona was only temporary and not permanent? Why does he just fold in the face of this Mishnah and the position of Rav Mari? So Tosfot comes up with a big chiddush here, which narrows significantly the machloket here about Kedusha Rishona. Tosfot says that everybody agrees that Kedusha Rishona, this Kedusha of the building of the first Beit HaMikdash, is a permanent Kedusha. And after the Churban HaBayit, everyone agrees that there is no Heter HaBamot. What do they argue about? They argue about the other aspect of Kedusha Rishona, which is, how permanent is it? Is it so permanent that it's as if the Mikdash is standing, even when the Mikdash is not there? Or is it permanent enough to say that there is no Heter HaBamot, but not strong enough to allow you to say that the Mikdash is as if standing? The nafka mina will be, can you bring Korbanot in Yerushalayim when the Mikdash is not there? So that's what Tosafot says. This whole machloket about the permanence of Kedusha Rishona revolves around this one issue. Can you bring Korbanot in the Makom HaMikdash, Makom HaMizbeach, or can you not? But everybody agrees that there's no Heter Bamot afterwards. And by that, he then explains Rabbi Yitzchak's position, which is Rabbi Yitzchak originally thought that Kedusha Rishona was temporary, and therefore, you could have a Heter Bamot afterwards. Along comes Rav Mari and the Mishnah and tells us, no, you mistook the machloket here. The machloket, you're right, is about Kedusha Rishona, but that machloket is not about the Heter HaBamot, it's simply about whether you can be Makriv Korbanot after the Churban HaBayit or not. Now, we'll come back and discuss this more in detail with regards to the ramifications today. Let's first discuss the machloket Tanaim that we have here. It's not. We have a Mishnah. Amar Be'lezer, Shemati Kshayu Bonim Be'echal, when they were building the Echal, I mean, this is the time of the second Bayit, Asu Kalaim Le'echal, they put up curtains for the Echal, V'Kalaim Le'Azara, and they put up curtains around the Azara. I mean, they basically simulated the walls around the Echal and the Azara by putting up curtains. Ela Shebe'Echal, when it came to the Echal, Bonim Mibachutz, they put the curtains, the wall has width to it, the curtains are much narrower. So they put the curtains, when it comes to the Echal, inside of the thickness of the wall. Therefore, when they're building the wall outside of the curtains, they build the wall without having to be inside the Echal, they can be outside the Echal. Ubazara, when it comes to Azara, it's the other way around, which is that the curtains were to the outside of the width of the wall, and they're boni mimifnin, they build from the inside. The obvious reason for this is that they don't want people in the Echal building, so they have the curtains on the inside by the Echal, whereas by the Azara, they have the curtains on the outside. The implications, or the impression the Gemara is trying to give us here, is that Rabbi Eliezer believes that there was a requirement to build and to establish a mikdash in order to bring the korbanot. Rabbi Rabishua says, Shamati shimakrivim afo pishein bayit. You can be makriv even though there's no beit mikdash. Ochlim kodshei kodashim afo pishein kohim. You can eat the kodshei kodashim even though there are no walls or curtains around the area of the echal of the kodesh. Kodshim kalim umayso sheni afo pishein choma. And you can eat kodshim kalim umayso sheni even though there's no wall around the city. So even though you're lacking the walls that define the areas in which you can eat, the walls of the city for Maisa Sheni and Kodshim Kalim, the walls of the Azara for Kodshei Kodashim in terms of their being eating and Petach Ol Moed, all of those things that are requirements by Korbanot, you don't need them to be there physically. Once they've been established, they are there permanently, which is because Mipnei Shkudusha Rishonah Kitcha L'Shaita V'Kitcha L'Atid Avo. Because the first Kedusha was a permanent Kedusha, meaning when they built the first Beit HaMikdash, that Kedusha remains permanently and is never undone. So you don't need all of these things. Michlal, you would infer from this that Rabbi Eliezer Savar lo kitcha lati davo. The statement that Rabbi Yeshua is arguing on, he's arguing on Rabbi Eliezer, and Rabbi Eliezer says that you have to put up the walls, you have to put up these items, implying that he believes that the Kedusha Rishona, the first Kedusha, was not permanent, and that's why they had to rebuild the Mikdash in order to be makriv korbanot. Because in Sefer Ezra we know that they come back and they begin the construction of the Mikdash, but they don't complete the construction of the Mikdash for a very long time period. There are time periods where they have the cessation of the building, and so on and so forth. So how do they makriv korbanot in the interim? So they did that by putting up the walls according to Rabbi Eliezer. According to Rabbi Shua, there was no necessity for that. So the Gemara says here, look, you have a machloket tanaim as to whether the first kedusha was permanent or not. Amalei Ravina, the Rav Ashi, mimai. Why do you have to say that's a machloket? Dilma dekulei ama kedusha rishona kitcha l'shaita v'kitcha l'atidavo. Maybe everybody agrees that the first kedusha is permanent. So then, how do you explain their difference in opinion? Amar mai deshmielei kamar, amar mai deshmielei kamar. They were telling you what they heard about what they did in the time of Ezra. They didn't have it documented. So here they're giving you what the Mesorah was that they had about what exactly they did. But not that there's a halakhic ramification to what they did. They simply, this was the manner in which it was done. Then Rav says, well then, so then, according to Rabbi Eliezer, if the Kedusha Rishona was permanent, why does he need the curtains to be established in order to put up a Mikdash? He says, the Tzniuta Ba'alma, that's not a halakhic reason. They put it up there simply to make an area that's private so that the Avodah wouldn't be done in this open forum. It would be done within a context of the Mikdash. So the Kohanim were simply for Tzniut. They were not for the halachic ramifications. But everybody agrees that the Kedusha, or the original Kedusha Rishona, was permanent. So Mar says, okay, we can't prove from there that there's a machloka Tanaim. Elaki hai Tanae. Here is where we can show there's a machloka Tanaim about this issue. The Tanya. Amar Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi, lama manu chachamim et elu. Why did the Chachamim count these cities? Kishalu Bnei Agolah, Matzuat Elu, Vikidushum. That when the Bnei Agolah came back, in the time of the second return, second coming of Bnei Israel to Eretz Israel, when they returned from Bavel, when they returned from Paras, when they come up there, they have these cities, and they establish these cities, and they mekadesh them. Aval Rishonot, Bitlu, Mishabatla Haaretz. But the first ones, meaning from the time of Yeshua bin Nun, but once the land was conquered and Bnei Israel were thrown out, it lost its status of Kedusha. Alma Kasavar, you would conclude from this, that he holds that Kedusha Rishona, Kitcha L'Shaitav Lo, Kitcha L'Atid Lavo, that the Kedusha Rishona was only a temporary Kedusha, and had to be reestablished with the return of the people in the time of Ezra and Nehemiah. So that's what the first Tana says here. First Tana says that as far as the Kedusha of the walled cities in Eretz Israel, the reason that the Mishnah in Arachin is listing out these cities is to teach you that these cities have Kedusha. Why do these cities have Kedusha? Because they were reconsecrated in the time of the second Beit HaMikdash. But why do they have to reconsecrate them? Because without the reconsecration, they would not retain the Kedusha or the original Kedusha from the first time that Bnei Israel were in Eretz Yisrael before the Galut Bavel. So he has a clear position that the Kedusha Rishona is only temporary. On the other hand, Veriminu, Am Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi, v'chi elu bilvad hayu. So that's not the only statement we have from Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi. The first statement, and now we have another statement from Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi, and he says here, v'chi elu bilvad hayu. Were these the only cities that were walled cities from the time of Yeshua bin Nun? Alok v'ne'emar, shishim ir, kochelev argov. These are all these cities that they conquered up in the area of Ever Yardain. Uchtiv, golei larim bitzurot choma. These cities were fortified cities with walls. They had these tall, impregnable walls. So you see here that these are walled cities from the time of Yeshua bin Nun. Why do the Chachamim enumerate these cities and not all of these other cities? When the Bnei Agolah came up, they found them, and they were mikdash, they sanctified them. Where it says, kiddushum, why were they consecrating them? You just told me you don't need to be mekadesh them. Ella, you have to say this. Matzu et elu uminaum. They found these and they counted them. Velo elu bilvad. But these aren't the only cities. This is just a sampling of the cities. Any city that you know of which had a wall from the time of Yeshua bin Nun, kol mitzvot alolo noigim ba. Then all the mitzvot of a walled city apply to it. Mipnei. The reason being, Kedusha Rishona Kitcha L'Shaita, the Kitcha L'Atid Lavo. The first Kedusha that was established by the building of the first Beit HaMikdash was a permanent Kedusha, and that Kedusha remains forever. Since it remains forever, as long as you can identify or figure out where these cities were, or the cities that did have walls around them from the time Yeshua bin Nun, then they have Kedusha of a walled city. Kedusha of walled city has a number of nafkaminot. One is in terms of selling the house within that walled city, there are different rules than selling a house in unwalled cities. Number two is with regards to Mitzorah. Mitzorah must be thrown out of the area of Machane Yisrael. Well, Machane Yisrael in Eretz Yisrael is considered to be any city that has a wall around it. Walled cities from the time of Yoshua ben Nun, then the Mitzorah has to be sent out of that city. In addition, of course, in our Masechta that has a Nafgamino with regards to reading the Megillah on the 15th instead of the 14th. So these Nafgaminot apply to these cities, these walled cities, and that's dependent on when you think these walled cities are consecrated from. Is it that when the second time that Bnei Yisrael returned to Eretz Yisrael in the time of Ezra and Nechemiah, they were once again consecrated, re-mikhadesh these cities, because the Kedusha, or the original Kedusha, did not carry forward. Kedusha Rishona was only temporary. On the other hand, if you believe that Kedusha Rishona was permanent, then these cities are just an enumeration of those cities we know for sure had a wall around them from the time of Yeshua ben Nun. But any city that you know that about would also have the same din as these cities. So now the Gemara says, Kasha de Rabbi Shmuel de Rabbi Shmuel. So you have a problem here because you have Rabbi Shmuel in the Mishnah, Rabbi Shmuel in the Breita, and they're both, one saying that Kedusha Rishona is permanent, one saying Kedusha Rishona is temporary. When I says, straight down A, Alibi de Rabbi Shmuel de Rabbi Yossi. One answer is, yes, it's Rabbi Shmuel de Rabbi Yossi, but it's two different Tanaim quoting them. They have a difference in opinion as to what Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi said. That the difference is that one of them is Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi and one of them is Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi. So the one that Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi Amra, the Tanya, we have a bright, Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi Amar, Asher Lo Chuma, that doesn't have a wall, Afal Pishen Lo Achshav, Ayah Lo Kodem Mechen. So you saw the drush on that, the Korean Ktiv, the Lamed Vav versus the Lamed Aleph. It's written with the Lamed Aleph, it means no wall, but at the red as a Lamed Vav, that it has a wall. So that's what he teaches. The drusha that Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi has from that is that even though the wall was destroyed at a latter period, as long as it had a wall at the time of Yeshua ben Nun, that suffices to make it into a walled city. So you see that Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi could be the author of the position that believes that it's permanent. The Kedusha, or the first Kedusha, is permanent, whereas the Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi will be the author of the position that says that Kedusha Rishona was only temporary. So therefore, you have here a machloket tanaim that is clearly established by the Gemara with regards to Kedusha Rishona. Kedusha Rishona could be permanent, or Kedusha Rishona could be temporary. There are other sugyot in Shas which discuss another possibility, which is Kedusha Shnia, that the Kedusha in the time of the second Beit HaMikdash was a permanent Kedusha. And even if you believe that the first Kedusha wasn't, the second one was permanent, over here Tosafot tries to downplay that position and say that's only with regards to Trumot. That only has true with regards to Kedushat Haaretz, but not with regards to Yerushalayim. That's the way Tosafot plays it down. Now, as far as the halacha is concerned, there are many permutations of opinions with regards to what the halacha is over here. The Tosafot over here, again, diminishes or minimizes the Kedushah Shniya and says everything has to do with the Kedushah Rishona. And therefore, you come up with opinions that range the gamut, including the Balei Tosafot, who have many different permutations of this, which is, some say that the Kedusha Rishona was permanent with regards to Yerushalayim, but only temporary with regards to the Aretz, the land of Eretz Yisrael, whereas Kedusha Shnia also had the impact of affecting the Kedushat Aretz. That's one opinion in Tosafot. Tosafot then has another opinion, just the opposite, which says that Kedusha Rishona, the first Kedusha, was permanent with regards to the Aretz, but it was only temporary with regards to Yerushalayim. And then Yerushalayim was only reestablished with its Kedusha in the time of the second Bayit. Tosafot has all of these opinions. The Rambam has the first one that we mentioned, the Tosafot. So the Rambam has this unusual opinion, which is that the Kedusha of Yerushalayim was permanent at the first time that we went in, whereas the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael only became permanent in the time of Ezra and Nechemiah, in the time of the Chazarah, the return from Bavel. And he explains why. He says that with regards to Kedushat Yerushalayim, Kedushat Yerushalayim is dependent on the Shekhinah, the presence of Hashem. As we've discussed before, once the presence of Hashem was there in Yerushalayim, it never departed. Since it never departed, Yerushalayim always maintains its Kedushah from that moment in time when it was consecrated. On the other hand, Eretz Yisrael, the first time we came into Eretz Yisrael, we got it through conquering it. So therefore, when someone else conquered us and threw us out, it loses its Kedushah. On the other hand, the second time that we came back to Eretz Yisrael, we did not get it through conquest. We got it through a grant, or a chazoko, that was granted to us by the king of Paras. that grant gives it a status of permanence because it has nothing to do with conquest anymore. It has to do with the status or the chazoko that we have over Eretz Yisrael. Now, the Rambam's position is interesting. The question is why? And maybe we just explain what the Rambam says. The Rambam says that one depends on the Shekhinah and one has to do with Eretz Yisrael and how we got to Eretz Yisrael. It still requires some explanation of difference. But Soloveitchik, Zatzal gave a distinction or explanation within the Shito of the Rambam. It explains that the difference really depends on when Yerushalayim was sanctified. When it came to the first time Bnei Yisrael entered into Eretz Yisrael, they're Mekadesh Eretz Yisrael before they're Mekadesh Yerushalayim, because Yerushalayim is only established much later on. So the Kedushat Haaretz preceded the Kedushat Yerushalayim. While Kedushat Yerushalayim is dependent on the Shekhinah, that remains permanently. But with regards to Kedushat Haaretz, which came before Kedushat Yerushalayim, that can be wiped out, that can be removed. On the other hand, the second time that they come up to Eretz Yisrael, first of all, Yerushalayim always maintained its Kedushah, but beyond that, when they come up to Eretz Yisrael the second time, they center themselves in Yerushalayim, and then only afterwards sanctify the cities around. So then that next time that they come, the Kedushat Haaretz was after Kedushat Yerushalayim. And since Yerushalayim is permanent with the Shekhinah, they're able to then have that Kedushah spread to other areas in Eretz Yisrael and make that a permanent Kedushah, the Kedushat Haaretz. That's the explanation of the Rambam. The Raivod does not agree with the Rambam, and he says very strongly, he says, Svarat Atzmohi. He says, the Rambam made this up himself. I have no clue where he came up with this. Now, obviously the Rambam wasn't the only one who came up with this. The Balei HaTosafot describes something similar. They're trying to reconcile all the different Gemarot. Our Gemara here says there's only Machloket about the first Kedusha. Other places we have Machloket about Kedusha Shnia. In order to reconcile all these differences, that's what the Rambam solved, and so did the on the other hand, the Ravid believes, Lo Chalak ben Mikdash Yerushalayim. We never see any distinction between Mikdash Yerushalayim, the Shar, Eretz Yisrael. It's all the same. Eretz Yisrael and Yerushalayim, whether Kedusha Rishona or Kedusha Shnia, there's no distinction drawn between Yerushalayim versus the rest of Eretz Yisrael. Velo od, El Shani Omer Afilo Rabbi Yossi, the Mark Kedusha Shnia Kedusha Latid Lavo, even according to Rabbi Yossi, who says the second Kedusha, the second Beit HaMikdash established permanent Kedusha, Lo Amar L'Shar Eretz Yisrael. He only says it about the land of Israel, not about Yerushalayim and the Mikdash. Lo Amar. So he knows that Yerushalayim and the Mikdash would be destroyed in the future, and therefore he only was Mikadesh it out tonight, that when it's destroyed, it would lose its Kedusha. So he actually turns out to be the opposite of the Rambam now, saying that the Kedusha of the Eretz Yisrael was permanent, according to Rabbi Yossi, whereas the Kedusha of Yerushalayim was temporary. But then in the big picture, he says that Yerushalayim and the Eretz Yisrael have the same din, and they should be structured parallel in terms of whether they have Kedusha or not. You can't say one has Kedusha and one does not have Kedusha. And therefore, the Ravid concludes then, he says, Kach niglali misod Hashem l'reav. I got this from a secret of Hashem that is given over to those that fear Him. And he says that this came to him in some sort of Ruach HaKodesh of sorts. Lefikach hanichnas ata sham. Therefore, someone who enters the Makom HaMikdash nowadays, ain't bo karet. There's no chiyub karet. He says the Kedusha of Yerushalayim was only temporary and does not remain with us today. The Beit HaBechira, the Meiri, and Masechet Shavuot also brings down a similar concept and writes like this, G'dolei HaMafrashim katvu b'hagoteim, Sheha b'kedusha shenia lo nemra l'shar Eretz Yisrael, Aval Yerushalayim Mikdash yodea ya'ezo shadirim lishtanot, Hu itkadesh b'kavod omei, He's quoting the Ravid, obviously. Then he writes like this. The basic practice today is to go in there. But from what we hear, people go up to Har Habayit all the time. It says you should only eat in a place where there's actually a mechitza in terms of Maaser Sheni. But he says that the minhag pashut is to ascend to Har Habayit because there is no kedusha there. So there you have difference almost to say about the permanence of Yerushalayim. Some saying that Yerushalayim's permanence as kedusha starts from the beginning and never leaves, versus the Ravid who's saying that kedusha Yerushalayim is much more temporary than the kedusha of the remainder of Eretz Yisrael. So there you have these difference of opinions within the Rishonim. In order to, again, try to understand or explain how the Gemarot lay out with regards to Kedusha Rishonah and Kedusha Shniyah. We, in general, the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah, Paskin, simply along the lines of the Rambam, and we are choshesh for a kedushat Yerushalayim, and we do worry about the fact that people should not go up to Har HaBayit unless they are properly attended to in terms of Tuma and Tahara. And obviously you can't enter the areas that were the Makom HaMikdash, because there we don't have the ability to mitahar ourselves to enter into those areas. So then we are choshesh for those shitot that say that there is permanent kedusha to Yerushalayim, and that's how people, even those who ascend Har HaBayit today, conduct themselves. On the other hand, with regards to kedusha to Eretz Yisrael, we are somech on most of the Rishonim that today all of the kedushat Eretz is midrabanan. It's only midrabanan, and therefore all the trumot masrot that we take off is midrabanan. The shemitah that we keep is also midrabanan. The Rambam gives an additional reason to why that is the fact, is because even if you say the kedushat Eretz Yisrael is permanent with regards to trumot and the mitzvot tkuyot baretz, they have an additional requirement that rov Yisrael be be'eretz Yisrael. And until that's true, then there's no din d'oraita of Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. And again, today we are nohag in that manner, that the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael is not considered to be permanent in the way that would make us chayav midoraita, because either what the Rambam says, or because we believe like others, that the Raiva, that maybe there was no permanent Kedusha, and we basically assume that all the mitzvot tluyot baretz, we are practicing them midrabanan, and not midoraita based on that. But obviously there are opinions who think the Kedusha was permanent and triggers it to be a mitzvah d'oraita. And others who think that the kedusha dissipated, and there is no kedusha there to show, and therefore there would be no obligation in terms of trumot or any of the mitzvot tluyot baretz whatsoever. Our practice, again, is to be noheg like it is a mitzvah d'rabanan. Okay, now we're going to move on to now the beginning of the agadato. The agadato that's going to take us through the remainder of the perek, which really discusses the Megillah and the agadato of Purim and the drashot on the Megillah. So here the Gemara begins here, Vahi Bimei Achashverosh, Amar Rabbi Levi, Vitei Rabbi Yonatan. So this Rabbi Levi, we're going to have a number of memorot from him. Then first of which is this one, which is Davazeh Misoret Biyadenu. We have this Misorah, Man Shei Knesset Gdolah, V'Malkom Shenemar Vahi, Enu Elo Lashon Tzar. Anytime the Torah uses the term Vahi, you can expect something bad or difficult to take place afterwards. So here the example, or the classic example, and why it's brought here, is Vahi Bimei Achashverosh. So that starts with Vahi. And the conclusion is obviously something bad happened, which is Hava Haman. Haman shows up on the scene. Vehi bimei shvot ha-shoftim in Megillat Rut, it says Vehi bimei shvotim, and then right afterwards Hava Rav. There's a famine there. In the beginning of Sefer Breshit, it says Vehi kechel adam l'rov, vayar Hashem ki rabba ravat adam. So man gets up now and begins to go around. And as soon as Vehi, this happens, he turns out to do really bad. The man went off on his evil ways. This is talking about Migdal Bavel. Again, Vayhi. And it says, let us go build a tower, a city. This is with regards to the four kings and the five kings in the battle with Abraham. So it says, so then a war ensues. We saw this earlier in the parak, that Yoshua is walking around Yericho at night, v'charbosh lufa biyado, and then all of a sudden a malach Hashem appears to him with his sword drawn, and again takes him to task over the bitul atamid and the bitul Torah. Pi Hashem et Yoshua, Hashem was with Yoshua, and then you have the problem right after the conquest of Yericho, v'yimalu b'nei Yisrael, that they were mo'el, they took from the booty that they weren't supposed to take from Yericho, Achan does at least. Then next one is from the beginning of Shmuel Aleph, v'yeish achad min ramataim, ketchana ahev, v'Hashem sagar drachma. The beginning of Sefer Shmuel is about Vayihi, and then sure enough, right afterwards, we get the information that Chana is unable to have children. Then the next one is, with regards to Shmuel, a little later on in Sefer Shmuel, it says, Vayihi kashir zaken Shmuel. Shmuel gets older, and sure enough, his children do not follow in his ways. Next one is, Vayihi David uchod rachav maskil, Vashem imo. David, things are going well for him. Everything he does with a wisdom, and Hashem is with him. And right afterwards, Vahi Shuel Oyena David. In other words, we have Shaul, who is now becoming hostile towards David and becomes his adversary. Next is Vahi Kashav HaMelech Bebeito, that David HaMelech is now settled in his palace inside of Ir David. And now he has in mind, let me build a house for Hashem. I want to build a Beit HaMikdash. And sure enough, he gets news right after that, which is, and it says, that are you going to be the one who's going to build me a house in which to live? Or the pasuk that we have quoted here is Rachatelo Tivnei Abayit. You're not going to build it. So then we have here a description of a big disappointment that David wants to go and build the Mikdash, and he's denied by Hashem in building of the Mikdash through the Natan HaNavi. Now the Gemara says, wait a minute, is that really true? Because we have examples of the word Vayhi, and they don't seem to be so negative, which is Vayhi Bayom HaShmini. Yom HaShmini is the Shmini of the Miluim. And it says there, Vatanya Oto Yom HaTas Simcha Fnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu K'Yom Shni V'Robo Shemayim V'Aretz. On that day, Hashem rejoiced like on the day that He created the world. Ketiv Hacha Vayhi Bayom HaShmini. It says here, by the consecration of the Mishkan, Vayhi Bayom HaShmini. Ketiv Hotam, and it says, by creation, Vayhi Erev, Vayhi Voker Yom Echad. So those two we're going to bring together, create a Gzeira Shava of sorts, which teaches us that as far as Yom HaShmini is concerned, it's a very happy day. And it's a happy day because it's like the day of creation. So Gemara says, now that's easy to explain. Hashchiv Nadav and Avihu. Okay, it's a great day, but there's also some pretty bit negative things that happen, which is that Nadav and Avihu are struck down on that day. Doesn't it say after 480 years from the time that Bnei Yisrael left Mitzrayim? And over there, Shlomo's building the Beit HaMikdash. There's nothing negative going on. Vachtiv, and we have other additional examples. Vahi kasher ra'ah Yaakov et Rachel, when Yaakov saw Rachel, and Vachtiv, and it doesn't it say in Meseh Breshit, Vahi erev vayivoker yom echad, Vahi kasheni, Vahi kashlishi, Vahi ketuva. You have all the days of creation where it says Vahi erev vayivoker, and none of that is considered to be negative. And the same thing with regards to when Yaakov sees Rachel. These aren't negative outcomes. These are things that actually turned out pretty positively. So Gemara amends now the statement in order to rectify the problem. So Amar Ravashi, Kol Vayhi, when it comes to Vayhi, Ika Hachi V'Ika Hachi, there's some that are good, there are some that are bad. It's not definitive with regards to the word Vayhi. But Vayhi B'Mei, Enu Elo Shon Tzar, when it comes to the usage of the word, the phrase Vayhi B'Mei, that is always negative. And the explain over here that Chamisha Vayhi B'Mei Havu. So whenever you have Vayhi Bimei, it's a Lashon Tzar, and there are five appearances of Vayhi Bimei in Tanakh. It says Vayhi Bimei Achashverosh, which is obviously our case of here by Purim, Vayhi Bimei Shvot HaShoftim, and Vayhi Bimei Amraphel. Those three are quoted before in the Gemara for Vayhis that are bad. Now they all have Vayhi Bimei, and those Vayhi Bimei is negative in all these cases. By the time of Achashverosh, you have Haman. By the time of Shvot HaShoftim, you have a Rav, a famine. Vayhi Bimei Amraphel, you end up with a war. So then the Gemara says, Vayhi Bimei Achaz. That's also something that's considered to be negative. Vayhi Bimei Yoyakim. And also Vayhi Bimei Yoyakim. So Vayhi Bimei Yoyakim is actually from Yirmiyahu Aleph, which was this week's Haftorah that we just passed. Parshat Matot. It is the first of the Shloshad de Purnata, the three Haftorot of Purnata we read from Yirmiyahu Aleph. So it starts out, Vayhi Bimei Yoyakim, and then it goes on to tell Yirmiyahu basically that Bavel is going to be coming from the north and it's going to override the entirety of Eretz Yisrael and everybody's going to go into Galut. That's Vayhi Bimei Yoyakim. Vayhi Bimei Achaz also ends up starting out as something negative, although it ends in a much more positive note, which is here in the Nevuah of Yishayahu. Vayhi Bimei Achaz ends up or results in a battle against him, where Pekach ben Remalia and the Melech Aram form an alliance to come and attack Achaz in Yehuda. But right after that, Hashem appears to him and says, listen, I'm going to save you. These two no-goodniks are going to be wiped out, and you don't have to worry about them. Just you make sure that you follow in the ways of Hashem, and then it gives a messianic type of view there, the birth of a child who's going to be a redeemer, and many of the Rishonim and most of the Mefarshim there explain it, referring to Chizkiyahu HaMelech. So here again, you have Vayhi Bimei Achaz at least starts out as a negative, which is that he's now being attacked by two enemies at that point in time, but Yishayahu's message to him is actually more positive after that point in time. So here you have five times the word Vayhi Bimei is used. In all of these cases, it has a negative association. Now, we have another statement, Amar Rabbi Levi. So Amar Rabbi Levi is brought here not because necessarily it's connected to our Gemara or to Purim, but it's brought here because it's Rabbi Levi who's the author of the position, which is Davar Zeh Misoreh Bidenu Me'avotenu. We have this Misorah from our forefathers. Amotz v'amatzi achim havu. Amotz and Matzi were brothers. Gemara says, Maika mashvelon. Okay, great. They were brothers, but what does that mean? Ki ha'adam Reb Shmuel bar Nachmani am Reb Yonatan. It's because of this saying of Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani, and Rabbi Yonatan, kokala, she eats nua b'beit chamia, any daughter-in-law who is very tzanua within the house of her father-in-law, zucha v'yotzim imena melachim u'nevi'im, because of her tzniut, she's then zucha that she has kings and nevi'im and prophets that will descend from her. Minolon, how do we know this is true? Mitamar, we know this from Tamar Dichtiv, because it says by Tamar, v'yir'eha Yehuda, v'yachshevel lezona, ki kiseta paneha. So Yehuda sees her on the side of the road. He thinks her as being a zona. Why does he think of her as a zona? Ki kiseta paneha, because she covered her face. So what does that mean? Mishum, here's the drasha, mishum de kiseta paneha, because she covered her face, v'yachshevel lezona. Why would he consider it a zona when she covers her face? Covering her face is a sign of tzniut. It's not a sign of being a zona. Ella, what's the answer? Mishum de kisteta paneha bebeit chamia. She kept her face veiled or covered in her father-in-law's house. He had no idea who she was. He never recognized her because he never seen her face. So zachta v'yatza mimena melachim nuvim. And therefore she was the one who was zucha, that she had kings and prophets that descended from her. Obviously Yehuda marries her, and the lineage of David comes from Tamar. So she is obviously the mother of the Davidic line. The problem is, how do we know this is true with regards to prophets, to Nevi'im as well? So Melachim, David. Nevi'im, how do we know Nevi'im also? That's what that statement was meant, which is that Amotz v'Amatzi are brothers. So it says with regards to Amotz, Chazon Yishayahu ben Amotz. So Yishayahu's father is Amotz. So Yishayahu is one of the top permanent Nevi'im amongst Klal Yisrael, Yishayahu ben Amotz. And we just said here, Amotz ve'Amatzi Achim. Amatzi is one of the kings of Yehuda. So one of the kings of Yehuda is Amatzi, and his brother is Amotz. That means Yishayahu is also from the same Davidic line, and therefore Yishayahu is a descendant of Tamar. And that's how we prove that Tamar, because of her tzniut, had both a Navi and Melachim and kings that descended from her. Now, Bama Rabbi Levi. Again, another statement from Rabbi Levi. Devar zeh mesor b'yadeinu v'avotenu, makom aron eino min amida. That the makom aron takes up no space in the kodshei hakodashim. And we learned this together in Baba Batra and Yom as well. Just go through it quickly over here, which is Tanya Namihochi. We have a brayta that supports it, that the aron took up no space. Aron asher asa Moshe, yesh lo eser amot l'kol ruach. When it comes to the aron of Moshe, it has 10 amot of airspace in every direction. The only problem is that the entire Devir, the entire Kodesh HaKodeshim, is only 20 by 20 Amot. Well, you have 10 Amot of empty space in every direction. That means the Aron is taking up no space. V'chtiv, and it says, L'fnei Devir Esrim Amah Orech, tells you there that the length and the width, Esrim Amah Rochav, of the Devir of the Kodesh HaKodeshim is 20 by 20. Uchtiv, and now this next part is not necessarily necessary. There, the statement in Baba Batra says two things. It says, number one, that the Aron is Enu Min Amidah. The Aron is not counted as taking up space. In addition to that, it says the Kuvim do not take up space. They don't take up space because the wingspan that's going to be described here takes up the entire space, which is that Uchtiv Kanaf HaKruv Echad Eser Amot, Kanaf HaKruv Echad Eser Amot. Each one of the Kuvim had a wingspan of 10 Amot. So then if they're 10 Amot, that's 20 across. There's no more room for the body of the Kuvim. So Gemara says, Aron Hecha Havakoi. So where's the Aron fit into this picture? Where the Kuvim fit into this picture? Alav Shema Minah, B'nei Sayomet. It was there without taking up any space. So the fact that it was there without taking up any space is an indication of the presence of the Shekhinah. We talked about this in the past, that the more obvious the miracle, and the more obvious that the presence of Hashem is there, that is where it becomes more and more Kadosh. The Kodesh HaKadoshim is a place where it's so obvious that there's the presence of Hashem, because of the Aron, and the Aron takes up no space. So that is obvious that Hashem's presence is felt in that location. That's why that's a place that is the most kadosh place in the Kodesh HaKodashim. Rabbi Yonatan, so now we move on to a new genre of Agadah Torah here, which is that when they gave a shir to start the drashot on Megillat Esther, as Rashi calls it everywhere, Geret Purim, they wanted to dash in Iger Purim, or they wanted to do a drashot regards to Purim, this is the opening thing that they did, or opening drasha that they gave. So Rabbi Yonatan Patachla Pitcha the High Parsha Tamihoch. When he began to engage in Purim and Megillat Esther, he used to open with this Parshata, V'kamti alehem, and I will come upon you. V'chrati lebavel, and then I wipe out for Bavel. Shem, usha'ar, v'nin v'neched. I'm going to wipe out for them their name, their remnant, their offshoot and their offspring, Nu'um Hashem. Now the Gemara explains, what are these items? Shem, zaktav. What do you mean I'm going to wipe out their name? This is the font or the lettering that they use. That's because, Rashi says over here, they didn't have their own, they were borrowing it for someone else. She'ar, zulashon, zelashon. That refers to the language, that the language is going to be wiped out or destroyed. Nin, zemachut. The nin, which is mentioned in the pasuk, the offshoot, means the kingship or the kingdom will be taken away from them. V'neched, zuvashti. Neched, the granddaughter, that's Vashti. Here is how Chazal connect her back to the Nebuchadnezzar of Babel and say that Vashti is related to her. And that Achashverosh's ascent to the throne was because he married into royalty. And Neched, that I'll wipe out the Neched, that's Vashti who gets wiped out over here in the story of the Megillah. Tosfot does ask the question with regards to Lashon of Babel. We know that Lashon of Babel is Aramaic. And Aramaic is still spoken till today. So he says that was the language of the street. But there was another language of the royalty, and that's what we were speaking about, and that's what was lost. I used to open up the drushas with regards to Megillat Esther with the following. In place of the thorns will come up cypress. And in place of the briars, myrtle will come up. So by the way, this is interesting. I always think of this right before Purim. This is the Perek in Yishayahu that we read on any fast day in the afternoon. The Torah that we read is from this. And this pasuk is mentioned. So always think about it that Tanit Esther that precedes going into the reading of the Megillah or Purim itself. So here in the afternoon you have this pasuk quoted. And he's going to darshan it here with regards to Purim. And they go into Purim. I'm not sure which is the cause and which is the result. Which one's the chicken, which one's the egg. But you have a drasha here from an afternoon on the Tanit. That is always adjacent to the beginning of Purim, except when Purim falls out on Sunday. Right, so then he says here, what does it mean? Tachat ha-natzutz, yalev v'rosh, tachat sirpad, yalev hadas. Tachat ha-natzutz, who does that ha-natzutz mean? Tachat ha-man rasha. He will replace, uproot ha-man rasha. Sa atzmo avodah zarah. Made himself into idolatry. Tichtiv, u'b'chol ha-natzutzim, u'b'chol ha-nahalulim yalev. There, it's not so clear that the pasuk is saying exactly what Chazal say over here. But it says, in all the thorns, and all the brambles, yaleh, they will come upon them, they will dwell upon them. So it seems to be that Natsutsim and Alulim are these negative things of Avodah Zarah, and they'll be overridden. Parosh, say Mordechai. This cypress refers to Mordechai, Shinikra, Rosh, Tuchol Abisamim. Because he's called the top, or the head, of all the spices. Shinemar, it says, Vata kach lecha b'samim Rosh, Mar Deror. See, this is one of the b'samim that is counted towards the making of the items for the Mishkan. Umitargaminan. Over there, the translation in Aramaic is Maridachi. Maridachi. Marimur. Dachi means pure tahor. But Maridachi is also Mordechai. So that was what it means. Tachar ad natzutz. Yalev v'rosh. The v'rosh is referring to Mordechai. Tachar ad sirpad. In place of the briars is Tachar vashti arash'ah. That is Vashti, who gets wiped out. Bat Binosh of Nebuchadnezzar. She's the granddaughter of Nebuchadnezzar Rasha. We just saw this before, that she's the granddaughter, because that's what the reference in the pasuk is to being wiped out. And when Nebuchadnezzar is the one who says, Saraf, Refidato, Beit Hashem, because he destroyed the roof, or the structural support of the house, that the roof was made out of gold. But here you see that the word Refidato is used in the context of the Mikdash. And Nebuchadnezzar is the one who destroyed it. And then his granddaughter is the one who is the considered to be this Tachar ha-sirpad. Yaleh hadas, the myrtle will come in place. Zu Esther, that refers to Esther. Hatzadeket, she created Hadassah, because her name is Hadassah. Her Hebrew name is Hadassah. Her Persian name is Esther, or Istar. Shenemar v'hi omeinet Hadassah, that Mordechai was taking care of Hadassah. And Hadassah is Esther. Now, v'yal Hashem l'shem, that's a continuation of the pasuk from Yishayahu, which is tachar ha-natzutz yalev rosh, tachar ha-sirpad yalev hadas. V'yal Hashem l'shem, it'll be for Hashem a name. Zu mikra Megillah. Lo'ot olam lo yikaret. It's signed forever that will never be cut off. Elu yimei ha-purim. That refers to Purim. So they see that pasuk that is brought in Yeshayahu is referencing to Purim, and he used that as his introductory remarks to the learning of the Megillah. Rabbi Shua ben Levi patach la pitach lai parshat ha-mihocha, he used to open up his drasha with this statement or this saying, "Vayi kasher sas Hashem alechem letiv etchem, ken yasis la'ralech etchem." That just like the way Hashem rejoiced over you when things were going well, so too he will rejoice over you when things do not go well. It says, "Umichadi HaKadosh Baruch Hu matam shel Rishayim." Since when does Hashem celebrate the death or the loss of the Rishayim? Vaktiv, doesn't it say, "Bitzei lifnei achalutz, v'amrim hodu l'Hashem kilolam chasdo." So here it's talking about the case with regards to Yehoshaphat. Yehoshaphat is going out to battle with Ammon and Moab, and they have a fast day in Yerushalayim, and he gives them Musar, and they start to go out from Yerushalayim, and they have this musical accompaniment that's going out with them. So when they go out, these troops that go out, Vomrim, and they sing, Hodu l'Hashem kilam chasto, give praise to Hashem because his chasid is so great. Now this is prior to the battle, and before they find out that basically that Ammon and Moab were defeated already, or destroyed, and they really don't even have to go to battle. But the Gemara views this as a praise to Hashem for the assistance that he provides them. And here you look carefully, it says, Hodu l'Hashem kilam chasto. What's missing from there? Ki tov. Rabbi Yochanan, ma lo ne'amar ki tov. Why was ki tov left out of that? Boda zu, shein HaKadosh Baruch sameach mabatam shel rishayim. In this praise to Hashem, they left out the word ki tov, because Hashem does not rejoice in the fall of tzadikim. Ve'amar Rabbi Yochanan, ma'i dechtiv, what is meant in the pasuk, v'lo karav el ze kol alayla, that they did not approach each other all night. The pashtura pasuk is that the machane Mitzrayim and machane Israel were kept separate overnight by the cloud and by the fire. They're bringing down the Midrash that the Malachi Sheret wanted to sing Shira before Hashem, and his response to them is, Masei Yadai Tovim Bayam, my creation is now drowning in the ocean or in the sea, Vatem Orim Shira, and you're singing about this? That's inappropriate, it's wholly inappropriate. So Vlo Karav Zel Zekul Alayla is the opposite of what we say in Kedusha. We say with regards to Kedusha of the Malachim, they are Karav Zel Zek. So here it's the Lokar of Zelzah. They did not reach each other, I mean they did not sing Shira on that day. So then we have here the conclusion, which is, Masei Yadai Tavim Bayam V'atem Omrim Shira. How are you celebrating this fact? So then, how can we say that the whole idea of the Megillah, of L'Shem U'Le'ot Olam, is that Hashem is going to rejoice over the destruction of the the destruction of the Rishayim. Ve'vehi kasher sas Hashem l'kem alechem l'tiv l'chem ken yasis l'ra etchem, that Hashem is going to celebrate over the fall of the Rishayim, but that doesn't seem to be true here. So now we have one reconciliation, which is the Gemara says, Amar Belazer, hu eno sas, God does not celebrate over l'chem yasis, but he does cause others to rejoice. V'deganami dektiv ken yasis, it says ken yasis v'lo k'tiv yasus, that Hashem himself will celebrate, but rather, can you see, there will be those that rejoice in what Hashem does, Shema Mina. That means Hashem does not rejoice, but others do rejoice. Now this does have ramifications, and it is something that creates a certain amount of tension and moral dilemma, which is the fact that when it comes to the downfall of one's enemy, we have the saying which says, Bin Foli Ve'chal Tismach, with the defeat or the fall of your enemy, you should not celebrate. On the other side of this, it's clear from the Gemara here that it's important to say thank you to Hashem and sing Shira to Hashem. So how do we deal with that tension, which is that we're supposed to praise Hashem, we're supposed to sing to Hashem, and then on the other hand, we have this principle, V'olevecha al tismach. So one of the solutions to that problem is exactly our Gemara over here, which is that the difference has to do with whether it's Hashem or it's human beings. Hashem does not celebrate B'ma V'latan Rishayim, but those people that experience the Matapah Mapalatam Sherishim, they can sing Shira. So for Bnei Israel, they can sing Shira. But the Malachim, we're talking about Hashem Shira, they cannot sing that Shira. So that's one way to draw the distinction here between Balafale Vecha Al Tismach versus the idea that you have to give Hodah praise to Hashem. The other way that the Rishonim deal with it is has to do with the experience of those individuals. The experience of those individuals who went through the salvation of Hashem. Bnei Israel, who were saved by Hashem, they can sing Shira. The Malachim, on the other hand, who did not experience that and were not brought about because of the salvation of Hashem, they cannot sing Shira. So the difference or distinction we're going to make is whether the individual just went through the traumatic event and was saved, that person can sing Shira. On the other hand, those that did not experience cannot sing Shira. Then I might also explain something else that we have, which is the practice not to say a full Hallel in the entire Pesach. The Gemara in Arachin says that the difference has to do with the Korbanot. That with regards to Sukkah, every day is a different Korban, therefore we say a full Hallel every day. By Pesach, it's the same Korban every day, therefore on the first day you have a full Hallel, after that you only have a Chatzi Hallel, it's only a Minhag. Why is that? So one of the reasons brought down in the Midrash, instead of what we see here, the difference in Korbanot, is because that Kriyat Yam Suf took place on the latter of Pesach, on the seventh day of Pesach, and because that's not a good day, because Maaseh Yadai Tovim B'Yam, then it would be inappropriate to say Hallel on that day. So, wow, that's really nice the Midrash says that, but what about the fact that Bnei Israel sang Az Yashir? They sang Az Yashir, then why is that allowed, and then we're not allowed to say Hallel? So that distinction might have to do with the fact that Bnei Israel at that time were spontaneously singing praise to Hashem for saving them. They're the ones who went through the ordeal, and they're the ones who are giving praise to Hashem. But afterwards, to sing in a Hallel afterwards, that would be inappropriate. So that's one methodology or way to distinguish between Binfalei Vecha Tismach versus giving Hodah, praise to Hashem. Another track or another way to distinguish has to do with the nature of the praise that's given to Hashem. You're allowed to praise Hashem for saving you and bringing you through salvation. What you can't do is say that Hashem's happy about what transpired. So therefore, when it comes to Az Yashir, which simply discusses Bnei Yisrael's salvation from being taken through the Yam Suf and the destruction of the Mitzrim, that is permissible. On the other hand, for the Malachim to say Shira is inappropriate, but also for future generations to say Hallel is inappropriate, because Az Yashir deals with the topic in hand. Hallel has in it Hodu Hashem Ki Tov Kilam Chasto. It's a description of Hashem's happiness as well. And that would be inappropriate. That is not allowed. And that might be another distinction to draw here, which is, what are you speaking about? Are you speaking about Hashem's Simcha, or are you speaking about your personal Simcha? And again, that distinction can be refined to say that the difference is whether you're singing praise to Hashem is thanking Hashem for your salvation, or you're singing Hashem because He destroyed the enemy that's there, and that's why you're singing. So to sing for your salvation is appropriate. To sing about the enemy that was destroyed is inappropriate. But the basic idea of Binfalei Vecha Al Tismach comes from one of two reasons. One reason is that if you rejoice at the fall of your oyev, of your enemy, then Hashem will look a little more carefully at you, because the fact that you're laughing means that you think you're on the level where Hashem would not punish you, so Hashem's going to take a deeper look at that. So that's one reason that we say Binfalei Vecha Al Tismach. And the other one is because it's inappropriate. They're human beings. Human beings are dying, human beings are being destroyed, and therefore it's not a time for celebration. Again, celebration, the loss of life over there, it's a time maybe to celebrate your salvation, but it has to recognize the fact that there are people who are suffering and people that are dying on the other side, despite the fact that they may not care about it, but we do, and we act differently than the people on the other side. Another distinction that's drawn by the Rishonim is, Binfalei Vecha Al Tismach deals with a civil war or inter-battles between different parts of Klal Yisrael, whereas the singing song and praise to Hashem of the Rishayim, Ba'ovid Rishayim, Rina, that refers to the other nations of the world. So there are many distinctions that the Rishonim try to draw here in order to reconcile these different approaches, but are really different dilemmas that come up when we're in the success of defeating our enemy. How do we react? Balancing between Binfalei Vecha Lo Tismach Ube'oved V'Sha'im Rina and the requirement to give Hodah LaHashem for helping us defeat our enemies. Obviously, it's very topical to what's transpiring today. Rabbi Abba Bar Kana Parta LaHapitcha L'Hai Pirshat HaMihalcha used to start his drasha with regards to Megillat Esther from here. The pasuk in last pasuk in the second parak in Kohelet, which is L'Adam Shetov L'Fanav Natan Chachma V'Dat V'Simcha. To the one who's good before him, Hashem gives wisdom and understanding and happiness. Ze Mordechai Tzadik. Uluchote Natan Inyan Lesof Lichnos. And to the one who sins before him, he gives to Lesof Lichnos, to gather in, of course, on behalf of the Tzadik. Ze Haman. That refers to Haman. Ate Tov Difnei Elokim. To give good before God. Ze Mordechai Ve'Esther. So you see in the end that all of Haman's efforts were then to the benefit of Mordechai. So Mordechai was the good one. Haman's the evil one. Haman does all the work to gather it in. And then that's all given to Mordechai because Esther appoints Mordechai over Beit Haman. Rabba Bar Ofran, Patachla Pitchalai Parshat HaMeocha. He used to open up from this. V'samti kisi be'elam, v'avadti misham melech v'sarim. I will put my throne in Elam, and I will wipe out from there king and ministers. Now, Elam is the country or the area in which Shushan HaBirah sits. Shushan HaBirah is the city or the capital city, and it's in within Elam. So now, Hashem says that I'll place my throne in Elam, and I'll wipe out the king and the ministers. Melech zu Vashti. That's the wiping out of Vashti, who is, as the Gemara says before, from that royal lineage of Nebuchadnezzar. Visarim and the ministers, Haman. That's the wiping out of Haman. Vaseret Banav and his 10 children. Ravdimi Bar Yitzchak Patalcha Pitchalai Pashta Mehocha. Ravdimi Bar Yitzchak opened up his drosha from here. Ki avadim anachnu. We are servants. Ubavotenu lo azavnu elukenu. And despite the fact that we are in galut, in exile, and despite the fact that we are under the dominion of others, we have not left God. Ve'et aleinu chesed ifnei machei paras. And therefore, we have been granted with favor in the eyes of machei paras, who then granted us a teilanu michya, to provide us with sustenance and to allow us to go to Eretz Yisrael and rebuild the Mikdash. So when was this? Ematai, when did this happen? Bizman Mordechai or Zman Haman. That was the time of Mordechai and Haman that Hashem intercedes on our behalf. And therefore the kings of Persia find favor with our people. And they protect us because we remain faithful to Hashem despite the fact that we are in Galut. Okay, we'll stop over here and we'll continue with these themes again tomorrow. And with the Agadah that continues with regards to the Megillah and Purim.